Good afternoon. It's Thursday, the 19th of January, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, of course, Mike Robinson. We'll just say many people across the country are saying it's cold. It's certainly pretty chilly here in Plymouth. But I'm pleased to say we've got a lot of blue sky and sunshine. So the weather's looking good. Political climate not looking so good. But don't worry, because Theresa May's Fair Society is going to be looking after you, provided you take the mark of the beast. So here's the headline. It's patients in Cornwall to be issued a barcode and scanned as parts of a new safety trial in hospitals. Yes, this is real. There's a number of reports in Cornish press about this. The one in front of me says Cornwall has been chosen as one of the six test sites in the UK to trial tagging surgery instruments, breast implants and replacement hips with barcodes in a bid to improve patient safety. So the Royal Cornwall Hospitals Trust is involved, but Plymouth Hospital Derriford is also involved, I think. And the barcoding will allow everything from a screw used in a knee operation or a breast arm implant to be tracked. Now, where has this come from? Well, if you have a look at Cornwall Live and follow through, they've got a little cartoon, because, of course, this is all nice. It's all sort of cartoon, nothing to worry about at all. So there's the nice little animated hand drawing the nice little cartoon figures. But what we've highlighted there, of course, is the pan-European public procurement online system. So Jeremy Hunt would have us believe that this has actually come from him. If you get into this little video, it becomes apparent what's going on very quickly. This is moving us towards taking the microchip, the mark of the beast. And of course, pets were the trial with this. So your dog has to be microchipped. That was nothing to do for the safety of your dog. That was to get you used to the idea that it's pretty cool to be microchipped. And I'll just read this little bit here. Secretary of State for Health, Jeremy Hunt. Now, you remember, this is the man who says there's no NHS crisis, no problem at all with people dying on stretchers in corridors or packed A&E departments or people being turned away from the NHS. There's no problem, but he's pretty happy that he's implementing Scan for Safety. It's world first in healthcare and a vital part of this government's drive to make the NHS the safest and most transparent healthcare system in the world. So there we are. If you've read stuff in the paper about people dying in their thousands at staff hospital or at least 10 or 11 other similar hospitals or more recent reports, those reports are clearly fake news because Jeremy Hunt says there is no crisis in the NHS. Theresa May, the Prime Minister, has backed that up. So these are clearly false fake news reports in the mainstream media. And he's going to solve the safety issue by getting people barcoded.
Well, I think you're being very unfair here. I mean, it's clear that if they need to be able to track the bodies as they go through the system.
On the contrary, Mike, they definitely don't want to be able to track the bodies because, of course, what we're seeing is a drive to just get one doctor's signature on a death certificate. And as we've reported a couple of weeks ago, the government very keen to bring in private funeral arrangements, that's private for profit, where bodies can be taken out of the NHS and cremated within a matter of hours. No body, no evidence.
You said private for profit. I'm interested in just the title of that little video clip there, because it's a patient value chain.
Well, this is what we're dealing. And of course, the bed blockers, the patients that are no longer making money for the government or the NHS, they're going to be whistled out on the death pathway as quickly as possible.
Now, let's move back onto the subject of Theresa May. And if anybody's worried that we've been covering this for the last 3 days and that really we're repeating ourselves, there's more and more comes out on this. And this is probably the key subject, the most important thing that's going on in the UK, at least here. She wrote in The Sun this morning that we're going to create a fairer society. She said that this is why earlier this week I set out the government's 12 negotiating objectives for Brexit. Article 50 before the end of March. The 12 objectives are just part of my plan for Britain. Capital P again. So that's a brand name. And in fact, they were tweeting out a nice little animated GIF describing the plan for Britain earlier today. We'll have to dig that out and see if we can do something with that. Because last summer's referendum, and this is the key thing, last summer's referendum was not just a vote to leave the European Union. But I thought that's exactly what it was, an in-out vote on whether we wanted to be in the
Europe. I think you're a little bit confused there, Mike. Maybe age creeping in a bit because...
Clearly, because apparently it was a vote to change the way our whole country works.
Yeah.
It was a vote to change the way our whole country works.
Did it say that on the voting slip?
No, it didn't, no, but that's what it was. Because it was a vote to build a stronger, fairer Britain that works for everyone, not just a privileged few. And a Britain and a Brexit that works for ordinary working people, so that's really good. And they're going to release their modern industrial strategy, capital letters again there, that's going to be published early next week. And they're going to create a fairer society. So anybody that wants to understand what she means by fairer society, please have a look at the front page of the UK Column website at the moment and read our article on fairness and what fairness is all about in this context. And of course, not only writing in the Sun today, she's been a busy lady because she was speaking at Davos this morning and talking about the shared society. And the pearls were back, Brian.
Yeah, this is the pearl.
Do you think there was a rail?
Well, she's got very big pearls. I think that this is a statement that she is blue rinse Tory. Trust me, I'm the mature woman. I'm in the right sort of class. This is all part of her propaganda of image.
That's right. But we've got to remember who her audience for this event was, the globalists. And that was exactly who she was speaking to, because she was determined that she can deliver the change that people need. And who were the people? Well, of course, the people she was speaking to at Davos. She said that she wants to show how, by taking a new approach that harnesses the good of what works and changes what does not work, that she can maintain, indeed can build, support for the rules-based international system. The UK, she said, a country that has so often been at the forefront of economic and social change, will step up to a new leadership role as the strongest and most forceful advocate for free trade anywhere in the world. And it's interesting that a couple of other people have now started to pick up on the fact that Britain is becoming the free trade advocate. I'm going to reiterate this point. What we're talking about here is proxy TPP, proxy TTIP. So instead of these big headline-grabbing free trade deals, we're going to have smaller individual free trade deals, which are going to develop into a mesh of free trade deals with Britain at the centre, which are going to make TTIP look tame by comparison. She went on to say a little over 6 months ago, millions of my fellow citizens upset the odds by voting to leave the European Union and embrace the world. Let's not underestimate the magnitude of that decision. It means Britain must face up to a period of momentous change, and I believe that's exactly what's coming. And if people think that Britain has changed in the last 20 years, we're probably going to see an equivalent level of change in the next 20 months.
Yeah, to take us to a worse level. I'll comment on that in a minute, if I may.
Absolutely. While it may have been easy for the British people to shy away from such a path, they fixed their eyes on that brighter future and chose a bold, ambitious course instead. They chose to build a truly global Britain. And again, I ask, was that on the ballot?
No, it wasn't. No. The language is really excellent, Mike, isn't it? Because they're not talking about Britain as in the nation state and the people who live in Britain. This is her talking for this unique group. This is becoming more and more easy to discern when you listen to what she actually says.
And this is the key point, and this is why I'm spending so much time on this. What she is saying at this point is really important to understand, I believe. She went on to say, however, the mission I have laid out for the government I lead to make Britain a country that works for everyone goes further. It is to build something that I have called the shared society, one that doesn't just value our individual rights, but focuses rather more on the responsibilities that we have to one another. This respects the bonds that people share. And that recognises the obligations we have as citizens, obligations that make our society work. So this is a completely turning British society on its head, common law society, where government protects the rights of the individual. And now we only get those rights if we meet our obligations. This is absolutely key to what's going on here. It is these bonds and obligations that make our society strong, she said, and answer our basic human need for definition and identity. And I'm absolutely clear that it is the job of government to encourage and nurture the relationships, networks, and institutions that provide that definition. So if we put this statement to nurture the relationships, networks, and institutions into the context of the common purpose with the small c and the small p, what we have is not only the common purpose networks of the charity, but we have the NGO networks, we have the business networks, and all these networks, this is Theresa May's Black Widow web, all these networks being merged, joined. This is communitarianism of a type that I think nobody has even considered.
Yeah.
It is an extreme form of politics.
And isn't it interesting that she makes this very detailed speech to Davos, but you don't see Theresa May standing up actually talking to the British nation about what she's going to do, that, for example, she is going to revitalise the railways and public transport. She doesn't stand in front of the nation actually talking tangible facts about what she can grip to be going on in the country, industry, getting proper jobs back.
Because those things aren't on the table.
They're not on the table. You go to Davos and you talk in this very flowery newspeak language about an agenda, which these people obviously know is going on, but those silly little voters back in UK, they don't really need to know. So,
And then she went on to discuss globalization again, and she was back onto this rhetoric that she started off with back in November at the Mansion House speech. She said, on globalization, that some people are being left behind by economic changes. She said it's essential for business to show leadership, to show that in this globalized world, everyone is playing by the rules. Well, we're going to come on to Rolls-Royce again in a moment because there's more on that. But of course, we've seen this with the way that business respects the same rules as everybody else, from the banks and from a whole bunch of other business types, business categories. She went on to say, if you're just getting by, you don't want the government, a government that gets out of the way. You want a government that will help you. I think she's got that 180 degrees out. I think probably most people at this point just want the government to get the heck out of the way. She goes on to say, I'm determined that centre ground mainstream politics can respond to the concerns people have today. And as we build a new, bold, confident global Britain and shape a new era of globalization that genuinely works for all, and as we harness the forces of globalization so the system works for everyone and so maintains public support for that system in generations to come. It was just saying the same thing over and over again. I want this to be the legacy of our time, to use this moment to provide a responsive, responsible leadership that will bring the benefits of free trade to every corner of the world. So that's her legacy.
So we can't run. I come back to this very simple and easy statement. We've got this Theresa May's Conservative government that can't run Britain. The country is on the verge of collapse at the moment. But what is their policy all focused on? We're going to run the world.
Yes, that's exactly it. Liam Fox, then, he is our international trade minister.
Wasn't he disgraced by using a Mr. Werity as his very close friend, taking him into meetings when he wasn't actually qualified to be in those meetings?
Yeah, I wasn't sure exactly what the relationship was there.
So Fox is disgraced, steps down from sort of political the front, bit of time in the wings, and now he's brought back in.
Right, as free trade minister, and here we go. Britain is embracing the brave new world of free trade, he wrote in the Telegraph this morning. The brave new world of free trade, that's fantastic. When Britain voted to leave the European Union, it was not a symptom of insularity nor a call for isolation or protectionism. Rather, it represented a desire to return to our roots as a global nation of with global influence, a small island with a mighty economy, selling our goods from Los Angeles to Lahore and all points in between. Fantastic. Absolutely wonderful. I don't think I can bore you with the rest of it because it really is rubbish. But nonetheless, the key point here is free trade, as we said, I think a year ago, has been and remains at the centre of British policy. And this is where they're going. But I am going to spend a little bit more time on this fool because Boris Johnson made a fantastic speech yesterday in India. He said he was complaining about whiskey tariffs because, you know, Boris takes things seriously. And he said that although he had no particular desire to attack Indian whiskey tariffs, I think the time has come to stick up for free trade. We have just decided to restore our military. Well, he went on to talk about the military, would you believe? And Britain's reach around the globe.
Had he been drinking whiskey at that stage?
I suspect he had, but he was telling us all, telling everybody there about how great Britain's hard power reach was. Soft power will come on to in a second, but he said, we've just decided to restore our military presence in east of Suez with a £3 billion commitment over 10 years and naval support facility in Bahrain. We've committed to the whole world, he said. Sorry, we have commitment to the whole world. The Royal Air Force has just sent Typhoon fighters to Japan and South Korea on Exercise Eastern Venture, showing that Britain remains one of a handful of countries able to deploy air power 7,000 miles from our shores. We have ambition. Our strategic defence and security review makes it clear that the Royal Navy's new aircraft carriers will be present in Asian waters. The five-power defence arrangement, which joins Britain with Malaysia, Singapore, Australia, and New Zealand, remains the only permanent and multilateral defence pact in Asia. Twice a year, British forces exercise alongside our allies in Southeast Asia. And as our naval strength increases in the next 10 years, including two new aircraft carriers, we will be able to make a bigger contribution. In the Indian Ocean, we have a joint UK-US facility in Diego Garcia as an asset that is vital for our operations in the region. We're also a member of the UN command on the Korean Peninsula, while in Brunei, we have a deployable garrison of British Gurkhas. And like this country, we have our principles, a similar approach to the world. He's talking about India there. When it comes to the tensions in the South China Sea, we're in favour of the rules-based order. So there we go again, back to this rules-based international order. Britain takes no position on the merits of competing claims in the South China Sea, but we too take a view in how they're pursued. So that's good. That should make us all feel comfortable.
Take more water with it.
Yeah, well, yes, indeed. And we did get back onto whiskey then because he said, and let us go back to the whiskey with which I began. It is an extraordinary fact that no one can deny that even though Scotland is incontestably the home and progenitor of Scotch, the only place in the world where water trickles through the Peaty Glen in exactly the right way, the total share of Scotch whiskey, the authentic whiskey in the Indian market, the biggest single market in the world, is something like 4%. Netting the UK only £80 million a year in exports. Now imagine if we could just double or treble that by removing those pesky tariffs and giving the Indian consumer more money to spend on other things. Think of the boost in morale of the Indian whiskey drinker and the boost to the Scottish industry. And then think how wonderful systematically it would be if we could have zero tariffs on Indian products such as those electric cars or buses that you're now seeing on the streets of London.
Yeah, we wouldn't want anything like that produced in UK. No. We'll sell them alcohol, but we wouldn't want anything actually tangible produced in UK.
The question is, if we sell them more alcohol, what kinds of buses and cars will we get back?
That's a very interesting question.
Yes. Anyway, in the meantime, Christine Lagarde said, well, don't worry about anything. Anybody's saying it's going to be really hard and there's going to be lots of pain and Brexit's going to be really difficult and stuff like that. She's not in prison at the moment for some reason, even though she was...
I thought there was a little bit of fraud going on in the background.
Indeed, and she was prosecuted for it, but no, she's still
back out.
Still out and about. She doesn't end up in solitary confinement for 9 months for doing nothing.
Perhaps we should start a petition for Christine Lagarde, HMP Foston Hall.
Quite possibly. So anyway, that's Brexit. That's where we're at. We're going to take over the world. There you go.
Right. This is pretty scary, actually.
Yeah, it is, yes. Janet Yellen, then, head of the Fed, as we've said there, she's been talking about uncertainty. She said that, you know, it's an uncertain world, but not to worry so much because her assessment at this point is some of the global uncertainties we focus on are a little bit less worrisome than they have been in recent years. But commodity markets can be a source of volatility and have an economic impact. And we have seen substantial fluctuations in energy and other commodity prices And we watch that carefully because that's a source of uncertainty. Economic policy, that's another source of uncertainty. And so they're going to closely follow what happens with economic policy. And they're going to factor those economic policies into the outlook and take account of their impact on what they might need to do to achieve their objectives. So that's good. That should make us feel better. These are very important uncertainties, she said.
Okay.
Right. Zero Hedge, however, had a slightly more realistic look at uncertainties, and they have produced a graph reflecting global economic policy uncertainty as against global economic growth, and showing a big correlation between...
It's like jumping off a cliff, really, yes, at the end there.
Well, exactly. So they're showing a correlation between economic growth and uncertainty, the type of uncertainty that Yellen was talking about, and showing that uncertainty at this point in time is absolutely massive, and warning that perhaps we might see that reflected in the financial system.
Okay.
But it's all right, because we'll soon be at war with Russia. And NATO, of course, without actually mentioning Russia, blaming Russia for cyber attacks. Jens Stoltenberg talking about this in the press today and yesterday. The number of hacks on NATO has increased 60% apparently in 2016 compared to the previous years. And these are state-sponsored hacks, of course. NATO facilities experienced 500 such attacks. Extensive intervention by experts was required, according to Jens Stoltenberg. He said, according to our latest evaluations, there were a monthly average of 500 threatening cyber attacks last year against NATO infrastructure that required intensive intervention from our experts.
Has anybody seen any evidence whatsoever to support these statements about cyber attacks?
No.
I don't remember seeing a document. I don't remember seeing graphics of some form of analysis. I don't see due diligence done on a trail of evidence showing these attacks. People just stand in front of a camera and say, well, we had a bit of a cyber attack. It would be like UK columns saying, well, we had some problems with our computers earlier in the week. We had a problem with Skype. Clearly, those were cyber attacks, and presumably they came from Russia. I mean, that would be a completely erroneous and false statement, but this is exactly what the British government is pushing out and NATO's pushing out. Where is the evidence to support these claims?
So there you go, Mr. Stoltenberg, let's have it.
Okay. Well, if we're in deep trouble with the risk from the Russian bear, we'd just like to bring your attention back. This is the Commandant General of the Royal Marines. And like other British senior British military officers, he's very big on Twitter. And what sort of stuff has he been putting out? Well, of course, we're just past the Christmas period. And this isn't a photograph. This is actually a little video clip. Now, I want to make the point here that onboard warships at Christmas time, for example, there is an attempt to sort of relax things a bit and make light of festivities which people would be enjoying at home. So this sort of stuff goes on. It's fine when it's on board, but is this really the stuff which the Commandant General of the Royal Marines should be pushing out to world media, making a complete prat of the commanding officer of HMS Ocean? I personally would say not. What we can't find on the Commandant General's Twitter page is anything to do about his support for Sergeant Al Blackman, who everybody hoped was going to be released on bail at Christmas, but wasn't. So this man kills on the front line and is jailed. And if we just take Tony Blair, we could bring in David Cameron as well. These people organising unlawful wars and the killing, but they become celebrities and millionaires. So we've titled this Welcome to Theresa May's Fair Society. And if we just jump back to the Commandant General Royal Marine, the other thing that he's doing very, very successfully is advertising the European political model. He's doing everything possible to help big up the development of the EU military. And of course, his main target is the anti-piracy operation, Operation Atalanta, which is off the coast of Somalia. So we've got him standing by the European Ring of Stars here. This is advertising the EU political agenda. And here's a massive meeting, productive meeting and operational HQ with shipping industry senior leaders, counter-piracy operations off the coast of Somalia for 2017 and beyond. So there's no danger that the UK's involvement with the EU is going to dissolve here. Now, this is the EU's own page, massive amounts of ships and men and weapons and equipment. And of course, we are to believe that a few locals, pirates with machine guns and rocket propelled grenades, cannot be stopped by the combined might of the UK, US and US military. This has got to be the biggest scam operation we have ever seen. What was the point of it? To have an operation to drive together an EU military compact, basically.
Yeah. Right, let's have a little bit more on Rolls-Royce, because the Thai authorities were not terribly happy about this deal that has been done with the Serious Fraud Office. So Thailand's airline has launched a probe into the fact that Rolls-Royce paid millions of dollars in bribes to win contracts with them. And Thailand is looking seriously at taking some action on that. So the countries involved in these alleged bribes, there's nothing alleged about them, as we'll see in a second, were Indonesia, Thailand, India, Russia, Nigeria, China, and Malaysia. Brian Leveson, of course, as we said, was the judge that authorized this mechanism for avoiding prosecution, the deferred prosecution agreement. And he said that this constituted the most serious breaches of the criminal law in the areas of bribery and corruption. Brian, the Thai authorities, maybe this isn't quite over for Rolls-Royce, but this is a spectacular situation where we have evidence, proof, agreement from Rolls-Royce that this bribery and corruption took place. We've Leveson saying this is the most serious breach of the criminal law and not a single criminal charge being brought.
And Leveson must have helped facilitate that situation.
Absolutely.
Mike,
absolutely.
This is the key point. So the man who was put forward by David Cameron to take control of Britain's press and media, fully backed up by Common Purpose, the political charity, this is the man who now says, well, massive fraud and corruption, but we don't want to prosecute any individual because that would be simply too horrible. And the root of this is to do with UK's black arms trade, which I think we're going to be talking about more in the weeks to come. But Brian Leveson.
Yes. What more can you say? Perhaps is the best way to describe Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London. Because everybody in London is going to die, apparently. London has yesterday had a toxic air alert issued for yesterday, today and tomorrow. And air pollution was set to reach its high peak yesterday. Still very high today, tailing off tomorrow. 17 boroughs. Everybody's going to die as a result because they're not going to be able to breathe. Sadiq Khan said London's dirty air is a public health emergency. We will continue to use all the technology at our disposal to inform Londoners about levels of air pollution in their neighbourhoods. The official advice from the government was adults and children with lung problems and adults with heart problems who experience symptoms should consider reducing strenuous physical activity, particularly outdoors. So that's helpful.
That's good.
Of course, there are no hospitals available to take anybody that suffers from such symptoms because the queues are out the door.
No, but we can get them chipped efficiently, so... Well, that's all good stuff.
Well, that's right. So, of course, what's going on here? Well, this is part of the city's agenda. This is something else we'll be talking about a little bit more over in the coming days. There'll be no transport in London other than London Transport.
Built in India.
Yes. Yes. Now, let's have some more fake news because, of course, Channel 4, in recent weeks, while we've had Vanessa Bailey on the programme talking about Syria in particular, Channel 4, the purveyors of fake news on Channel 4 News, have decided that the way they're going to fight fake news is by running a week of programmes on fake news.
So they just carry on their normal programme.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's going to be documentaries, news programmes, some satirical stuff, all about fake news, and that's going to happen early in February. So we're looking forward to that. This is a fantastic statement on the state of news media in Britain. And just a quick note to say that we note that Russia Today have been banned from posting anything other than text on Facebook at the moment. They can't post any videos. They can't post any live streams.
So the BBC a few days ago meets with Facebook to talk about countering fake news. And hey presto, Russia Today gets banned.
Yes, and what happened was that they were running a live stream of President Obama's final speech, his leaving speech, and some other news networks, possibly the BBC, had marked that live stream as being their copyright, when in fact it was something that was shared by many media companies.
Yeah.
And RT absolutely had the right to put it out. But unfortunately, Facebook's automated algorithms identified it as copyright, and they got therefore banned from posting anything which was other than text.
Right. Well, the next item we can't call fake news because it's reporting facts, but we just want to look at this local report from the Plymouth Herald, Old Slaughterhouse Turned into Art Exhibition in Plymouth. This is the old slaughterhouse in Royal William Yard, which used to be the Royal Navy's supply facility, going back to the days of sail. And of course, this is where the salt pork was produced and animals were slaughtered at this location. Now, luckily and happily, this has been turned into the space for an art exhibition. And we've just included one of the images of the quality of the art that is appearing. I did look at one of the other pictures, and I'm pretty sure I saw a similar dark, interesting figure hanging in sort of wall shackles. I might have been mistaken, but the picture was extremely dark and depressing. So this isn't fake news. But what are our media teams really doing? Are they enhancing people's lives? Well, luckily, we can come back to the subject of BBC Media Action. And we're delighted to show you that, relax, because BBC Media Action is actually changing people's lives to the better, so that people are going to be brought into the realms of BBC's views and values. Here we've got the operations manager for the Libya programme based in Tunis. So this is going back to 2015, but this shows very clearly the BBC now in amongst the debris of Libya, but helping to rebuild that helping to rebuild that country as they see fit. And if we look at some of the requirements there, influencing and persuading, ability to present sound and well-reasoned arguments to convince others, can draw from a range of strategies to persuade people in a way that results in agreement or behaviour change.
Yeah.
So that is what the BBC is doing through its proxy charity. It's getting into countries that have been destroyed with the help of the BBC, of course, because they don't report the truth going on. And then we change the behaviour of the individuals in that country to support the European Union.
Just let me understand this. We've got a country which is a sovereign nation.
Yeah.
The BBC produces a load of propaganda which demonises that country in the minds of people. That demonization generates the support to go and bomb the hell out of that country. We go and bomb that country to bits. Yep. Then the BBC goes in and starts changing people's minds in that country in order to support the regime that bombed them in the first place.
That is it in a nutshell. I should have produced a graphic, Mike, to show that, but you've taken us through that in very clinical terms. We're now seeing the beast for what it really is. And if you're unsure that we're on the right track, well, this was just one website. There's many more. This is the Natural Resource Management Network. And it's convening the communication, media development, social and behaviour change community. And there's BBC Media Action for Somalia. And I felt it was quite interesting to have a look at what the BBC was up to in Somalia. If you just Google BBC Media Action and Somalia, page after page of their projects and programs to change Somalia for the better. Now, I have been to Somalia many, many years ago. It was one of the saddest, the most depressing Navy visits I've ever had. It was my first encounter with people starving on the streets. But my goodness, we can be reassured the BBC is in there to help change the behaviour of those starving people to what? Help the EU programme, presumably. So this is another job advert that we've got here. This is country director, BBC Media Action, Kenya and Somalia. Have a look at what they're after. And just to make sure we know what we're talking about, at the end of that advert, they say, be sure to download the BBC values that we really want you to follow when you get in. And can we have a look at this manipulation? Well, this is part of a website, Africa's Voices, BBC Media Action's work in Kenya. And this is what they say. Our pilot with Africa's Voices was really illuminating. Through interactivity with our audiences, we were able to see who was listening and watching our TV and radio program, Semia Kenya, and where they were in the country. And not only that, we were able to collect unique evidence of the impact of the program.
This is lab rats, social engineering.
Yeah, but social engineering, what were they doing? They were actually influencing the Kenyan elections. So the BBC was in there influencing the way people were going to vote in Kenya.
Sorry, can I just clarify? We've got a bit of a problem at the moment because Russia has been alleged to be influencing an election in the United States.
That's true.
That's a problem.
Yes.
But this isn't.
No, because this is the BBC, and obviously the BBC says that we can't trust the Russians, so we know we can trust the BBC, and then the BBC is going into all these vulnerable countries, particularly the eastern, I'll call it the eastern seaboard of the European Union, so all of the countries that are in very dangerous position with regard to politics between East and West, and of course Ukraine is at the forefront of this. The BBC has been in working to train its journalists to be embedded in the country to report the news as the BBC would wish. And of course, we've already proved that BBC Media Action is the lead media spokesman for the European Union.
Is it just a coincidence that where BBC Media Action goes, international terrorism goes as well?
I wouldn't say so, Mike, because if you look at who actually has the ultimate control of this, it's the British government. We know that UK and the US have been funding terrorism in Libya. In fact, David Cameron was in at least two of the national papers boasting about how much money had gone to help those rebel movements in Libya. And we've seen the same evidence for the terrorists operating in Syria. And BBC Media Action said itself, boasted in fact, a lady called Julia Harkin, that they had been working in Syria since 2004 with the people who were trying to oust Assad. Mm. So EU and UK political agenda was regime change in Syria. The BBC couldn't do it direct because that would be too obvious. So what they do is they use their proxy charity, BBC Media Action, to help stir up that unrest that the BBC could then report. Mm. It's creating your own news, Mike.
Yes.
It's a very effective system, but it's not fake news.
No.
Don't get confused.
Okay.
Well, let's have some good news. I'll just have to come back onto this.
Yeah.
Here we are. The title is Action Conquers Fear. Now, we put this slide up a few days ago because this is Chris Leslie, the MP, who indeed Melanie Shaw worked for this gentleman many years ago, and he came to see her at one of the points she was out of prison. He's shaking her hand. He was there showing sympathy and concern. But this man has not done anything since Melanie has actually been in prison. Now, we asked for people to take some action on this, and a lady has sent this, Gillian has sent this fantastic letter. Let me read a little bit of it. Dear Mr. Leslie, please find enclosed a letter for you to deliver to Melanie the next time you visit her. I'm sure you'll be doing this as you must be very anxious given her past work on your behalf and to hear from her own mouth how she's been treated at Foston Hall. In the light of the fact that your constituent is being denied the rights guaranteed to all English subjects under Magna Carta, You will no doubt have noted with interest the recent judgment of the Supreme Court in favour of Abdul Hakim Bijal, on whose behalf those guarantees were specifically upheld. I've written to Lord Mance to congratulate him and his fellow judges on their wise decision and pointed out that other British subjects, Melanie among them, are at the time of writing less fortunate than Mr. Bijal. A copy of this letter is enclosed. What are you doing, Mr. Leslie, to ensure that Melanie does not consider to suffer torture at the hands of UK government agencies? I look forward to your prompt reply. And I've got to say, what a fantastic letter. And we need to ask here, how many other people, how have our viewers and listeners have taken this sort of action to support Melanie? We are asked time after time, what can people do to make a difference to help this lady and indeed other people? And we say you need to take action. Well, you've just heard an absolutely fantastic letter. Get those letters in to Chris Leslie. Don't allow him to fob you off on the telephone, emails, letters, personal visits, to ask as politely as possible what this gentleman is doing to help his constituent. And of course, in helping Melanie, what you will also be doing is helping to raise the importance of Magna Carta and common law, which are two of the key things that we need to reinstate in order to deal with MPs who are clearly out of control. So just remind you, here's the man. This was the Guardian report. Jack Straw and UK government must face kidnap and torture claims court rules. What a country to live in, Mike. I'm really unbelievably not proud to live in Britain. And if you're watching us for overseas, I would like to say that one of the things I find despicable about this country is that Theresa May, as one example, stands on the world stage as if we are leaders in justice and morality. But in fact, behind her, in the depths of Westminster and the establishment, we have utter filth. So we'll just push this point home. Action conquers fear, because this lady sent a second letter. This was the letter to Lord Mance at the Supreme Court. And what can we highlight here? She says in the first paragraph, I'm writing to you in relation to the Supreme Court decision regarding the rendition and torture of Abdul Hakim Belhaj. You and your colleagues are to be congratulated in basing your judgment on Magna Carta's promise that no free man shall be taken or imprisoned or dispossessed of his liberties or be outlawed or exiled or in any other way destroyed, excepting by the legal judgment of his peers or by the laws of the land. So we've got an interesting statement, and I'll just give you another part here. In relation to the case of Abdul, you're quoted as saying, the critical point in my view is the torture and seriousness of the misconduct alleged at however high a level it may have been authorised. And of course, this is a key point with Melanie's incarceration. It could only happen with the collaboration of the Crown Prosecution Service, the Home Secretary, who was Theresa May. She's now Prime Minister, still colluding in the torture and abuse of this lady, Melanie Shaw. So if you want to know what you can do about it, then really this says it all, that basically take action. And I'll just bring in the last bit of good news. Good news is that action does conquer fear. So if you're sitting at home thinking, well, my goodness, what can we do? This is the UK Columns article about evidence that was submitted to the Defence Committee exposing this scam of EU military union. And this was put forward by David Ellis from Strategic Defence Initiatives. We are delighted to say that this has now been taken up as one of the written documents of evidence to be considered by the committee. There it is, Strategic Defence Initiatives, written evidence. And so that evidence has gone straight into the Defence Committee. What will it do? Well, it's going to cause dialogue, but I would also imagine it's going to cause a problem with those that know full well we are continuing the military integration. So good news, we can end on good news, that if you take the right action, we do get results. And we need to say to our viewers and listeners, if you're watching the clampdown on free speech via the BBC and Facebook, for example, we need to act in order to stop it. That's the end of today's news. Thank you for joining us. If you're not a subscriber of UK Column, please consider becoming a subscriber and or making a donation. We need those donations. We need you as a subscriber to continue to fund the news that we're pushing out. If you like what we do, we need your financial support. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye.